This is Civil Discourse, a public affairs program of Gila Mimbres Community Radio, KURU 89.1 FM. I'm your host, Jamie Newton. My guest is United States Senator Martin Heinrich, Democrat of New Mexico, who's speaking with us by telephone from Washington, D.C. Senator Heinrich, welcome to Civil Discourse.
It's wonderful to be with your listeners.
Let's begin with your legislative priorities. At this time, what are your two or three top priorities for action by the Senate?
Well, this week, I am caught up in the battle to make sure that we replace the Patriot Act, including the bulk collection provisions that we've heard so much about within the Patriot Act, with something much more constitutionally based and workable, something that focuses on actual terrorists rather than collecting data on millions of innocent Americans. And that's an issue that's coming to a head as we speak in the U.S. Senate, and something I've been working very hard on.
I know you've co-sponsored legislation intended to meet needs that really ought to transcend partisan antagonism. I hope this is one of them and would include reining in the NSA, the National Security Agency, with its widespread harvesting of telephone and email communications. I'd like to ask if you're optimistic about this. And Senator Heinrich, since your election in 2012, have you seen progress toward overcoming gridlock in the Senate and in the House?
At times, yes, and at times it's been very challenging. And I think this is one of those areas where we really do have a coalition built on both sides of the aisle. It's something that people from all walks of life and all political backgrounds really understand, that if we're going to effectively balance our need to provide security with the constitutional liberties that we have in this country, that we're going to have to pull together and rein in some of these overly zealous programs. And the telephone metadata program at the NSA is sort of the poster child for that. I'm optimistic that we're going to get this done. I do think we're going to see an end to that program in particular. And we've been working very hard to pass the USA Freedom Act, which would replace the Patriot Act and which would be much more constitutionally based.
Individual rights are very important to a lot of people out here. We'll follow that, and I'll hope to talk to you about that again at our next conversation. When I interviewed you last year, Senator Heinrich, you spoke about your efforts to improve the quality of life for the working poor and women in this country by raising the minimum wage to $10.10 an hour, achieving equal pay for equal work for women, and federal programs to make higher education more affordable. What are the prospects now for meeting those goals?
Well, I think they're even more challenging. With the Republican majority in charge, there has not been a willingness to have a conversation around those issues, and it certainly hasn't been a priority for the leadership, the Republican leadership in the Senate, to bring those issues to the fore. Now, that said, I think by having that conversation last year and continuing it this year, we have lit a fire, and we're seeing these issues really take off at the grassroots level in communities, in cities, and in states all across the United States. And so I'm quite certain that when you can't make progress on a particular issue of social justice at the federal level, but you're able to raise the issue, you know, people take it up in their own backyards. And we're seeing that. We're seeing minimum wages raised across the country in municipalities and cities, in some states by referendum. So we are making progress on these issues, but it's one of those situations where sometimes even when you can't get something across the finish line, there's great value in having the debate and forcing people to defend a situation, a status quo, where people are working very hard, they're working full time or even more, and they live in poverty and they can't provide adequately for their families.
So yesterday, Los Angeles raised its minimum hourly wage to $15. Raises have happened in Chicago, San Francisco, you mentioned states, Alaska and South Dakota. And the National Low Income Housing Coalition issued a report yesterday saying there is not a single state in this union where a person earning $7.25 an hour, the federal minimum wage, can afford even a modest one-bedroom apartment. Do you think that this is one of those situations where the people are going to get out in front of leaders who have stood in the way of this kind of employment justice until they're swept along with a groundswell?
I think that's absolutely accurate. And I've seen this before. I mean, I really led the effort a number of years ago to raise the minimum wage in Albuquerque when I was a city councilor there. And eventually, the federal government caught up. And we've seen cities, other cities in New Mexico, Las Cruces recently, raised their minimum wage. Santa Fe has a minimum wage above the federal level. And I think that sort of leadership is really shining a spotlight on the fact that there are many people still fighting this at the federal level. I think we will prevail, and in large part because of the grassroots activism of people taking ownership of this issue in their own backyard.
Let's turn to energy resources. You serve on the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee. Senator Heinrich, can you talk about what many people may be unaware of, the SunZia pipeline for transmission of electricity from sources in New Mexico and Arizona to consumers elsewhere, and the proposed Keystone XL pipeline that, if it's built, would bring Canadian oil from shale through the United States?
Well, thanks for the question, and I think it really provides such an incredible contrast to, one of those projects, Keystone XL, and I'll take exception to one of the things you said. Uh-huh. It's really not oil that Keystone is going to be transporting so much as bitumen or tar sands. And having spent a fair amount of time, around crude oil, what we think of as crude oil is not what's going to be moving primarily through that pipeline. And tar sands are, in my view, a big step backwards in terms of our energy policy. They're dramatically more carbon pollution intensive than crude oil is, and they represent a step in the wrong direction for our overall energy policy. In contrast to that, you have a proposal to build transmission that would move renewable energy, put lots of New Mexicans to work in the construction sector, and really transition us away from our reliance on fossil fuels towards cleaner fuels. And where New Mexico can export a product, electricity generated from our sun and our wind, to other markets. And I think that's an example of what we should be doing, along with community and rooftop and distributed based solar, to change our energy future and to begin to responsibly deal with the climate change challenges that we're seeing every day in New Mexico.
Perhaps I could ask you about an issue that's very hot right now in New Mexico. Our regulated energy monopoly, PNM, has a replacement power plan that includes just 7% from renewable resources, the 93% balance from coal and nuclear sources. A nonprofit group, New Energy Economy, has proposed an alternative plan with 30% coming from renewable solar and wind sources. And as I understand it, that has been endorsed by the city of Santa Fe. Can you comment on these two contrasting approaches, one that emphasizes fossil fuels and nuclear, the second, renewable sources from solar and wind?
Well, I think that the future is clearly in renewables, and I think we need to make sure that we move as quickly as we can towards that kind of a future. And I've supported legislation at the federal level, along with Senator Udall, to create a national renewable standard that would require 30% of electrical generation by utilities across the nation to be renewable by 2030. I think one of the things I'm most excited about right now is I think we've reached a tipping point in particularly in rooftop solar, where it's going to be very hard to put the genie back in the bottle. And in particular, in the last year or so, the developments that we've seen in storage of electricity, both in traditional sort of lithium-ion batteries, like the batteries that Tesla is using in their new Powerwall, as well as large utility-scale storage devices like flow batteries, are going to start allowing us, and already have, to shift generation to shift electrical generation across time to when you use that electricity. And that really solves the challenges of intermittency. If you have wind that blows at night, or if you have solar that is strongest at noon or 1 o'clock, and you need to use that extra generation in the late afternoon when the demand on your swamp cooler or your refrigerated air is the highest, storage allows you to do that. And so that's another thing that we're looking at. How can we make storage a part of a new, smarter grid approach to energy generation so that we can effectively utilize much higher rates of renewable energy within the existing power grid?
Senator Heinrich, New Mexico has, of course, for decades been a center of research and management of nuclear weapons, and if I'm correct, you have recently voted for funding to continue New Mexico's role in nuclear weaponry, and you've emphasized the jobs involved in that. I wonder if you can foresee future conversion of the nuclear weapons facilities and personnel away from nuclear weapons, particularly in light of this country's treaty commitments to move toward a world completely free of nuclear weapons, and toward using those resources in this state for such purposes as mitigating global climate change and improving the technologies you've just described, effective, affordable storage for power that's generated from renewable sources. Do you foresee that possibility in the future?
Well, I think it's a possibility in terms of a shifting focus within the laboratories that we already see. We will continue to utilize the laboratories for our nuclear commitments under things like the New START Treaty. And as long as we have even a single nuclear weapon, we have to make sure that those devices are safe, secure, and reliable. But I really see the mission of the labs, which were created as national nuclear labs, really shifting towards national security labs in a broader sense, in that they are doing research and computer modeling on climate issues. They're also doing incredible research that is allowing us to broaden and deepen the penetration of clean energy into the economy. A great example would be Sandia National Labs and their equipment they have there to be able to test things like molten salt, which is used as a thermal storage device for 24-hour concentrated solar that also helps you to solve many of the intermittency problems that photovoltaics have traditionally had. So we're seeing that shift already occur. I think that's a positive thing. And I think that we live in a complicated world today where threats don't simply come from the former Soviet Union once, like they once did. We have to be much more nimble. We have to recognize the challenges that things like climate change pose, and also realize that there are going to be unforeseen threats that we need to be able to meet through our national security labs. And I think they are changing that focus in ways that is positive and much more nimble.
I'm aware that our time is quite limited. I'd like to ask you one other question that is about compassion toward people and also what some have described as national security. Could you tell us your position, Senator Heinrich, on federal programs such as DACA and DAPA that are intended to incorporate undocumented immigrants already in the United States into the society as productive residents who need have no fear of deportation? And how do you think the United States should respond to the influx of refugees from violence and poverty in Mexico and Central America, throughout Latin America, who try to enter the United States illegally?
Well, first let me say that I'm not sure why in government we always have to create an acronym for things. So most people don't know what DACA is, but people know who the Dreamers are. And if you've met some of these young people who have grown up in the United States who really don't know any other home, they don't know how to be anything but an American, who want to serve in the military or who want to go to college and become an engineer or a doctor. I've met many who've been, you know, at the top of their class. I think that they deserve a special path forward towards citizenship. And I think that the intermediate steps that the administration took to make sure that they're not deported while we work on passing something like the DREAM Act makes a great deal of sense. And when you're dealing with issues like the very challenging issues in Central America right now, where there are huge violence rates, where there are enormous areas that are under control of drug trafficking gangs, I think we need to have a certain recognition and level of compassion. And we also need to recognize that some of these some of the folks who have crossed are truly refugees in the legal sense of that term, and treat them as refugees.
Senator, I appreciate your responsiveness to the questions that I've asked. I know that we're running out of time. Let me just invite you to say anything you may wish to convey to our listeners here in Southwest New Mexico that I haven't asked you about.
Well, you've been great. It's been a very in-depth interview for a short period of time, and I have to say I was just down in the Silver City area and also exploring the Gila Wilderness with my family a few weeks ago, and it was great to be able to turn on the radio and hear Gila members' community radio. And so keep up the great work, and I look forward to being able to serve my constituents and your listeners.
Senator Martin Heinrich, thank you so much for being with us on Civil Discourse here on Gila Mimbres Community Radio. I look forward to our next conversation, and I hope that it won't be long until we talk again.
Thanks so much, Jamie.
Goodbye, and good day to you.